Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the editor-in-chief of the Quarterly Review of Film and Video, contributing writer, cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, Robin Hood Radio's very own critic. He joins us weekly. We are happy. The films are Test Pattern, My Darling Supermarket, and The Vigil. Hi, David.
Hi, Jill. How are you doing this week?
I'm fine, but it was really hard not to say Vigil.
Vigil. Right.
It was really hard.
This is not a movie about a Vigil. It's a movie about a vigil. But we'll get to that in a moment. This is another one of our weeks where our theme is to have no theme. These movies are just about as different from one another as can be. But they're all good movies. All three of them are good movies, each in its own way. So let's try to cover them in order here. Test Pattern is written and directed by a first-time filmmaker, Shatara Michelle Ford. And it is a very quiet, understated drama about a very harrowing and unhappy situation. We have at the beginning of Test Pattern a cute meet between a couple. A young white man approaches a young black woman in a bar and says the only reason he has the courage to speak up is that he's had maybe one or two too many. And he comes up and he asks for her phone number, which is something he says later on, and we believe him that he almost never does, but he does in this case. And she says, all right, yeah, okay, I'll give you my number. He seems like he's sort of cute maybe. And so the next thing you know, these two are a couple, in fact. They're dating and they're going out together and they're just having a very nice time and they get along really, really well. And interestingly, this is not really a movie about a mixed race couple, although that certainly enters into the story. What happens, and again, they strike up a very good relationship and they're basically living together after a while and they just get along really well. They're a nice couple. She, by the way, is a woman with a rising career. She has a new job and she's very enthusiastic about it. He is a tattoo artist who seems to have a reasonably good practice going for himself. So it's all very nice. Then one night, she goes out to have some drinks with a friend of hers, a young woman named Amber. And she really doesn't even want to particularly go out, but Amber really wants her to join her that night. And so they get together in another bar. And the man of our story, I haven't even said their names. The woman's name is Renisha and the man's name is Evan. Evan stays home. He doesn't want to go out. If only he had gone with her, things would have been different. So she goes out and she meets Renisha, goes out and she meets Amber. And then they start to have a few too many drinks and they start talking with some guys at another table. And it is really one of the fascinating things about this movie, Test Pattern, is that it's really not clear exactly what happens after that. However, Renisha wakes up in the dead of night in the bed of this other man who she has just met in the bar, and she fears that she has been sexually assaulted, but she has no memory of what happened at all. So she makes her way back home, or actually Evan comes and picks her up, and he is very upset by this, but he's upset less because she may have been, apparently has been unfaithful to him, but more because he's very concerned about this sexual assault that she apparently, probably endured. So he decides they have to go right to a hospital and they have to get a rape kit and they have to find out what happened. And that's what brings us into the whole next part of the movie, which is in many ways the most important part, because they have a terrible time getting a hold of any kind of treatment for her, much less counseling, just a rape kit to begin to find out what happened. And again, she has very little memory of what happened. It's possible that she was drugged. It's possible that one of the young men that she started talking with and the other in the bar slipped something into her drink, or it's possible that she simply had a couple too many, or it's possible that really maybe nothing really terribly bad did happen. But the point is, it's very possible that something really terribly bad did happen, and that's really what the movie is about. So the movie, and by the way, I have to stress, this movie is so understated. This sounds like a really melodramatic story. It's a story were made by any other filmmaker, it might have been people weeping and wailing and going through horrible hysterics and this and that. And it is the opposite of that. Everybody is very contained and controlled and above all frustrated because of this terrible, terrible quest to get a hold of a rape kit and to get some kind of resolution and comfort to maybe find out at least a bit about what happened and how difficult this turns out to be. So we have a major social issue going on here. The difficulty that victims of sexual assault may have in finding out, finding some sort of help from the authorities, whether it's help from the law enforcement or help from the medical authorities. That's what really what they're looking for here. And they have to keep going from one hospital to another to find a hospital that has a rape kit or that has a person who can administer the rape kit and do the proper procedure. And this becomes more and more frustrating as it gets along. At one or two points, Evan bursts out into real outrage about this. He's frustrated. He's upset. So is Renisha. But mostly, again, the movie is very contained. It's very quiet. And it's a very understated telling of this very harrowing story. So again, it's a movie that deals with real social issues, namely the problems that a woman might have in a difficult, extremely difficult situation like this. But it also is mostly a human drama, a drama of these two people and what happens to them when they're set into a very difficult situation and trying to find some sort of at least partial resolution for it. The acting, Brittany S. Hall plays Renisha, Will Brill plays Evan. It's a marvelous cast. It's a beautifully directed movie. And again, so understated. You just wish there were more movies like this around. A really affecting human drama that doesn't push things in your face, but lets you discover them scene by scene, moment by moment, sequence by sequence. It's a really, really good movie and an extremely promising movie debut. Second movie, as I said at the beginning, My Darling Supermarket, this is so different from the one before. This is a movie which was filmed in Brazil, and it's a documentary. The title in Portuguese is Meu Querido Supermercado, My Darling Supermarket. And this is a movie by Tali Yankelevich, and it is a documentary filmed entirely in a supermarket. Yes, yes, yes. And what it does is it provides a whole movie's worth of beautiful, aesthetically pleasing images of a supermarket. It's a very gleaming new supermarket. Apparently, it's recently been built. At the beginning, we see some scenes of what are apparently the supermarket being built, but that's not the thrust of the movie. It's a beautiful new building, and there are all of these gleaming products out there. And on one level, My Darling Supermarket is a tone poem, an ode, a tribute to capitalism, because, oh my gosh, all the products just look so nice. Everything is so beautifully packaged, and everything is so beautifully laid out on the shelves, and everything is so, oh, just a splendid looking place. So on one level, that is what My Darling Supermarket is. But that's not the emphasis of the movie. The emphasis of the movie is on the people who work in the supermarket. And sometimes they talk directly to the camera. And other times we see them at work and we hear them talking in voiceover. And we're constantly kind of moving around among different people. There's a few sort of main characters in this documentary. So there's a few we come back to more often than others. And what they talk about is the kinds of things that are going on in their minds and in their lives while they work at the supermarket. Sometimes they're talking about their work, about how much they enjoy this part of the job or they enjoy that part of the job and how much fun it is and how they kind of get along or don't get along with this person who works over there at the next counter. But other times, and this is what's most fascinating in the movie, they're talking about just the kinds of things they think about while they're doing their fairly dull, repetitive, pretty boring jobs. They may be thinking about religious matters. They may be thinking about something they read in a magazine about quantum physics. They may be talking about some friends they have who they think about while they work. All these different things, some of which are surprisingly lofty in their intellectual or perhaps spiritual connections. These are people who clearly have inner lives. They have minds. They have ideas. They have thoughts. They have interests. And they are very, very wide-ranging. These people are not intellectuals. They are people who work in a supermarket. But they're people who think about things beyond simply what is under their noses. And that is what is so fascinating about the movie. One of my favorite characters is the woman whose job it is to be looking at all the supermarket. Again, it's a very modern, state-of-the-art place. It has video cameras everywhere so they can look out for possible pilferage or thievery, you know, burglary. So they're and the woman who monitors the monitors, who sits there with this whole bank of screens in front of her in some office somewhere in the lofts or the bowels of the building. She loves her job. She feels this is what she was born to do. She just loves keeping an eye on all of this. And she talks talks with the floor walkers, the people who are down there on the floor. Oh, there's somebody with an empty cart who's sort of hanging around over there by the dog food. Go see what's going on. Okay. And there are some bizarre customers who come in, and they sort of keep a special eye on them and so forth and so on. So anyway, that is what My Darling Supermarket is about. And again, one part of me is a little bit dubious about this movie, because it really is just a kind of a tribute to the wonders of capitalism. Everything looks so beautiful, and the filming of the movie is so pristine and clear, and just the colors and the lines and the shapes of everything are so lovely. But again, that's not really what the movie is about. The movie is about the human beings who work there and about how very human they are on so many different levels. So again, it's a very unconventional documentary. I've never seen anything quite like it. I'm not sure that I would have chosen to see a movie called My Darling Supermarket, except that it sort of came recommended by an outfit that does pretty good curating, and so I decided to take a chance on it. It's less than an hour and a half long. That's in its favor, because I'm not sure I would have wanted to watch a four-hour Fred Wiseman movie about supermarkets. But it's a very, very wonderful, just enticing and engaging movie, and I could not recommend it more highly. Anybody who looks at My Darling Supermarket is going to have a good time with it. And our final movie for today, Jill, is The Vigil, which is a horror movie. Again, yet another totally different kind of movie for us today. This is a movie by another new filmmaker, Keith Thomas, who wrote and directed it. This is turning into a pretty good year for horror movies, even though the year is yet young. And The Vigil is very unusual in one respect. Of course, most horror movies, not all, but most are about supernatural things. And there's often a sort of an overlap with religious issues in the world of horror movies. Most of the more religious horror movies tend to be Roman Catholic in their interests. One thinks of The Omen. One thinks especially of The Exorcist and its various sequels, which is a very Catholic movie with, you know, Catholic franchise with priests as extremely major characters and all of that. But The Vigil takes a very different approach, which is very unusual. It's a Jewish horror movie, and it's very much steeped in Jewish lore and ritual and belief, and that makes it very unusual, and it makes it really very fascinating in all kinds of unusual ways. So the main character of The Vigil is a young man named Yaakov, and a guy he knows, who is a Hasidic Jew, and very Orthodox, says, "Hey, I really need you to help here." This is a rabbi, Reb Shulam, his name is. "I really need you to help out. This old man I know, this old man, he has just died. And we need a shoima. We need somebody to sit up with the corpse overnight until, as he puts it, the mortuary guys come and take him away in the morning." This is an Orthodox Jewish custom, that when somebody dies, you have somebody sit with the corpse. And if there's nobody else available, then you hire somebody to do it. Sometimes you can have a hired shoima. And that is what Yaakov is being asked to do. And he doesn't want to do it. It's going to mean sitting up all night with this corpse. But they finally strike a deal for a few hundred dollars, and Yaakov says, okay, I'll do it. The deceased person's wife is not available because she is very old, and she is apparently somewhat demented. So she's going to be there in the house, but she's not available to sit the vigil. So Yaakov takes this job. So now here we have, as unusual as the movie is with its very Jewish interests, we have something which is, you know, a very old tradition, not just of horror movies, but of horror stories generally, the person who is alone for a long period of time with a dead body. And sure enough, all of the horror movie things start to happen. Is that something moving over there in the shadows? Is that something moving around over my head in the upstairs room? Oh my gosh, what's going on here? And as the movie proceeds, more and more of these mysterious things start happening. More and more overtly horrible or horrific things start happening. And we start to learn more about Yaakov, whose own life starts to enter into all this. It turns out that he has an extremely painful recent memory involving a horrible thing that happened to him and his little brother, and other memories, more sort of a broader collective memories, such as memories that apparently may be related to the Holocaust, start creeping into it. And of course, that is going to be a part of every Jewish person's memory in at least a collective way. And I would hope of every person's memory, being the most horrific crime of the 20th century by far. So we have these fascinating memories and fears and ominous things creeping in. On one level, it's just a horror movie with a lot of little frights and scares. And, oh, that made me jump, that cut to that new shot, and that noise that just came on the soundtrack. But on another level, it's a very, very serious story about the kinds of traumas, collective traumas and individual traumas that can haunt us all, especially in our darkest moments. So it's a very, very interesting movie, largely because of its unusual provenance, its very Jewish roots and its Jewish interests. And on other levels, it's just a well-made horror picture that taps into a lot of the tried and true tropes and traditions of the horror movie genre and the horror story genre more generally. I had a good time watching it. It's a good scary movie, not a classic, but a good sharp scary horror movie. And again, this is turning into a pretty good year for horror movies. I like horror movies. If you like horror movies, you might want to check out The Vigil. And so that is my extremely changeable story this week, Jill.
For which we thank you as ever and always, David Sterrett. Films in Focus, the film's Test Pattern, My Darling Supermarket, and The Vigil.